Hello, everybody, and welcome to Keith and the Girl. How are you, Henda?
I'm good. How's it going?
I am very well. Charlie Todd from Improv Everywhere, you know him. He's going to join us in a few. He's going to talk about what he's up to. We're going to talk about the Keith and the Girl flash mob we just did. It's now available for you to check out. We'll get to all that. But first, the big news, right? At least here in America, the cover of Time magazine I'm talking about. Sexy.
Is that what you're calling it?
It's a mom.
MILF.
With a kid. Kid standing on a little chair. He doesn't even really need the chair. I mean, this is a big kid. Sucking on his mom's tit.
Yeah, on the cover. And at first I thought that kid was like 7 or something. Turns out he's 3 years old.
He's 3 years old, but they're definitely implying he's 7. Like, you're going to see this magazine and be shocked.
Yeah, they got like the biggest 3-year-old I've ever seen. He's a giant. And maybe he's a giant because he's sucking on his mom's tit. Like, look at my kid, you know?
So the mom, and she's hot, you know, you could tell she's a model. She's looking at the camera. And the kid, he's like the kid from Mad Magazine. He's looking on the side of, you know, sideways. And he's like, who, me?
Yeah. He's kind of creepy.
Yeah. And it says on the bottom right-hand corner, you know, this mom, 26 years old, and her 3-year-old son. But, of course, that's real tiny. That's for after you get outraged.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not outraged. I wouldn't be outraged. You can tit feed your kid, you know, when he's 3 years old. It's just sometimes it becomes awkward because your kid has all its full teeth. You know, your kid is able to talk in complete sentences and express a lot of situations to you. And also your kid can climb on top of you, pull your shirt down, and suck on your titty.
Right.
Now, maybe it's because I said suck on your titty that might not sound very appropriate.
It says on the cover of Time, how old is too old for tit eating?
The thing is like that woman is so skinny. Maybe she's using her kid to stay skinny because a lot of women breastfeed to lose their baby weight because you do lose weight a little faster when you breastfeed.
Sometimes it's that liquid weight you can't get rid of, right?
And I think your boobies stay fuller when you continue doing that.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a little odd. And of course, what they want to talk about, the cover says, are you mom enough? And they're talking about, you know, parents that do treat their kids like kids too long.
Like little babies too long?
No, they treat them like babies. They're, you know, in sixth grade and they're still breastfeeding some of these moms. I think it's Game of Thrones out there. It's disgusting. But how about this? That let's say the kid's only 3 years old, you know? And it is odd that at 3 years old, some kids can go in the fridge and take the sippy cup themselves, right?
Oh, at 3 years old, you can take anything you want that's in your reach. Like, your baby-proofing has to be next-level shit because you can climb stairs. A 3-year-old is able to do whatever anybody else can. Their motor skills are fine, but they just can't reach it, and they don't have, like, the brain capacity to put a lot of the shit together. But they're good to go.
How about this, though? This kid is a real kid, no matter what the age is. And now he's on a magazine that's respected, but that picture's going to be there for the rest of his life. Could turn into an iconic picture. Who knows? He's the breastfeeding kid.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, like,
maybe the next issue will be about bullying. Do you know what I mean? Hey, tit boy. Say in the cover there, titty. I'll suck my tit.
Wow, you really come up with good.
Well, kids—they're not clever.
They're not that clever, no.
Right.
You pulled from your 6-year-old you.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's to me, it's like there's nothing to really be outraged about. He's 3 years old. He's sucking on your titty. They're trying to push it in your face. I'm more outraged that she looks like she hasn't eaten anything. Maybe she's sucking on someone else's titty for food, because I would be first outraged at how skinny models are before like a 3-year-old is sucking on some, you know, his mom's titty. I had to make sure that was his mom because that was too big a kid to like stick him on somebody else's boob.
Do you want to be in the fashion magazines like I am? I do, Mom. I do.
But what's funny is it's Time magazine and they still needed a model to have her titty sucked by her kid.
Yeah. If this is what people look like in restaurants, I wouldn't mind. It never is. It's monsters out there.
It really doesn't.
It's my right. I know it is. I know it's your right.
It really doesn't bother me when women breastfeed in public. I think a lot of them are pretty subtle about it. They're not like completely undoing their shirt. And I don't know. It is distracting. You can't act like my right. boob because I'm feeding my kid is not the same boob that you would try to be eyeing when I wore it for cleavage to try to get someone to have a kid with me. You know, like right. you can't just turn that off, you know. But I think a lot of women are subtle. A lot of women have, you know, that that shmata thing, like over the baby's head, you know, okay. or they have like, they make bras for breastfeeding so that you don't have to take off everything. You just kind of right. pop that open. And, you know, I mean, your baby is getting breastfed. A lot of times, maybe it's cold outside. You can do it. You know, I don't think that we as a society should get outraged by side boob.
When I was a waiter, and so I just see it less now because I'm not, of course, but when I was a waiter, there is a large number of women who are doing it to prove a point as well, who are saying, this is my right. You can wait until after I take your order to feed your baby. I'm not exaggerating. I'm talking they flop it out as I'm going over the salads.
Okay.
You can wait a minute. And then if I have a weird look on my face, oh, what's the problem? I have diarrhea. I'm holding it in. What do you think the problem is? Coincidentally, it's you again making a point.
I can understand that because at the same time, there are registers that I've been to, you know, your cash registers that you go up to the counter and it says, don't be on your phone when right. we're doing the exchange of money. I can respect that. You know, let's say you're a waiter and you're taking someone's order and they're texting. I mean, yes, you can still hear me while you're texting, but let's have some sort of rapport that right. we're trying to establish.
I mean, if you want to act like this is normal, then I'll act like this is normal. And I'll lean over to the kid. Anything for you as he's sucking the tit. Go, no, you're good. Juice or, oh, you have everything you need. And the backup. You seem fine.
That's funny. As a side note, you know, Lauren waited tables for years and years. Right. And part of her about it is if somebody comes in with a kid, this is like a little bit of a different note, but only because you said you lean into the kid.
Right.
She'll get like 4 or 5 year olds and her restaurant does have a kid's menu and the mom or the dad will say, okay, what do you want? And they wait around for the kid to have an opinion yeah. on chicken fingers or hot dogs. Like it really freaking matters. And so a lot of times Lauren tells me that she'll just go, you want chicken fingers? And the kid will go, yeah. And right. then the parents will pursue it further. Right. Like there's nothing else to do in the restaurant. They'll go, are you sure you wanted chicken fingers? Because earlier you said you wanted pizza.
Right.
Lauren's like, well, we don't have pizza. What are you trying to do? I have other fucking tables in this room.
It's like when we used to face paint.
Absolutely.
Kids are so stupid. And you can just tell them what to think. That's the beauty of them. The innocence. And we would face paint kids, you know, at these kid parties. And the kid's like, I don't know what I want. And I can't draw. So I go, you want an awesome star, don't you? I do want an awesome star. And then there the parent jumps in. Or do you want Thomas the Tank Engine carrying Scooby-Doo while Shaggy goes, where's my tank?
Yeah, they really would start suggesting. It's like,
yeah, I want that. And then I go, or a bigger star. Now I'm fighting with them all. Or a star with a rainbow and a spider at the end, because I can also do spiders.
But I like when you argue with the mom through the kid. Well, since I don't know how to make Thomas the Tank, especially because there's a long line and I would have to have the picture in front of me, maybe you can pick right. something like, oh, I could do a spider web with your spider. And then the mom goes, well, I know you had your heart set on the tank engine thing, so we could compromise by maybe easier choo-choo train just write Tommy on it. And then I go, I can do that. That'll take a little bit longer, and everybody's waiting online. I'll throw some glitter for free, and I fucking hate glitter. Would you like that?
I never got to compromising. If I said, how about this? The mom would go, that is good. We'll take both. I mean, I draw a spider on a kid's cheek, and I go, ah, you're Spider-Man. And he's like, I am Spider-Man. I'm like, you're an idiot. But he thinks he's Spider-Man. And then the mom goes, no, I looked it up on my phone. This is Spider-Man.
Oh, Lord.
And that now I have to paint the whole body red. That's what I do. I would convince kids, by the way, to be the Hulk. And I would just paint their whole face green.
I remember that.
Like, you're the Hulk. There you go.
I can't. I remember the first time I saw that. I was painting. I looked over and some kid's face, and not even like the kind of entire face that you gave a shit about how green it is and lines. And you know, when you paint, you have to go up and down in order for it to look even. It was as if Keith took the brush and had the kid just say yes and no, right, nodding while he holds the paintbrush steady and the kid painted his own face.
Uh-huh. And then I'm like, you did that.
Well, maybe we shouldn't have hired someone like Keith who plays the how little work can I do today game.
It's a fun game. Mark Norman wrote, talking about this Time magazine cover, as racy as the Time cover is, it was the best audition I've ever been to. Big news. This is what I was talking about. Rihanna and Chris Brown are not getting along.
Get the fuck out. If they can't work it out, it's just over for all of us.
It seemed they were getting along, writing songs about sucking each other's dick and eating each other's pussy, but...
Yeah, we were all confused.
Yeah, he came out with the song and he was talking some shit.
My God, I really thought you just said he came out. And I was like, this makes the most sense ever.
No, he was saying, here's some lyrics he sang. Don't fuck with my old bitch, it's like a bad fur. Every industry nigga a done her. Shook the tree like a pumpkin just to smash her. Bitches breaking codes, but I'm the password. Rihanna unfollowed him on Twitter. That's a big move.
Well, this is, you know, you just read the lyrics. It's no winter has no floor, I'll tell you that.
And she wrote, aw, poor dat. And then hashtag N-E-A-U-X, number one, cur, C-U-R-R-R, which I believe means no one cares. And because...
My decoder ring says.
Right. This newspaper tells me. And then Chris Brown twittered before he unfollowed her, assumptions. I didn't say any names. So if you took offense to it, then it's something you feel guilty about.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. She feels guilty about being a pumpkin that he just smashed, I guess. I'm not sure what feels guilty about. No. Of course, this is what I'm talking about. Big news. President Obama came out and said, you know what? This gay marriage thing, I endorse it. I like it.
I saw that yesterday and I was like, okay. And then I moved on with my day and I really feel ignorant now based on my response, because I was like, oh, okay, that's nice of him. And then I moved on and then the internet blew up. Wow, this is what he's saying, da 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 da. And I'm like, whoa, I just thought it was a normal thing. I forgot how shitty everything is out there.
It is, yeah. That's the way I would feel, too. I'd hear it and then be like, okay.
Yeah.
This is, you're a little late.
Yeah, right. Good on him. Right. I mean, and also, you know, it's so close to election and right after the North Carolina thing. And, you know, obviously it's a move.
North Carolina voted against civil unions.
Yeah. And obviously it's a move. But then again, so is everything out of any politician's face. So, but he is making a stance, I guess, you know, and endorsing it. But does that trickle down to anything? You know what I mean?
Does that mean laws, or is that, well, you know what?
No, because the states have their own right to make their own decisions. He's not the one that makes that.
But it still means something. It means something to come out and say, I'm here, the leader of the free world, and this is okay. That's my opinion. And it's a shame it works like this, but other people will go, okay, you know what? I'll think about it too then.
Well, he's hoping, but, you know, it could be that it'll just be like, okay, not voting for you. Right.
But it is, he loses the Neanderthal vote. I think he's going to be okay. But it's the vice president that came out and started saying these things about gay marriage, kind of testing the waters, which just adds, you know, hey, it's good it happens. Almost who cares why it's happening. But it's the vice president saying about gay marriage. And then if it doesn't go over, it's like, Joe Biden, you're always saying things out of line.
That's like, you know what, then?
But people were into it. Now the president goes, and you guys are good with it, then I will officially say I'm good with it.
The vice president also tastes his soup before the president tastes it. Yeah. So I think this kind of goes along with that kind of thing.
Here's Barack Obama.
I have to tell you, as I said, I've been going through an evolution on this issue. I've always been adamant that gay and lesbian Americans should be treated fairly and equally. And that's why, in addition to everything we've done in this administration, rolling back Don't Ask, Don't Tell, so that outstanding Americans can serve our country, whether it's no longer defending the Defense Against Marriage Act, which tried to federalize what has historically been state law. I've stood on the side of broader equality for the LGBT community. And I had hesitated on gay marriage, in part because I thought civil unions would be sufficient, that that was something that would give people hospital visitation rights and other elements that we take for granted. I was sensitive to the fact that for a lot of people, you know, the word marriage was something that evokes very powerful traditions, religious beliefs, and so forth. But I have to tell you that over the course of several years, as I talk to friends and family and neighbors, when I think about members of my own staff who are incredibly committed monogamous relationships, same-sex relationships, who are raising kids together, when I think about those soldiers or airmen or Marines or sailors who are out there fighting on my behalf and yet feel constrained, even now that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is gone, because they're not able to commit themselves in a marriage. At a certain point, I've just concluded that for me personally, it is important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married.
Oh! So it's like kind of saying, of course, it's weird that this is something, but unfortunately it is.
I like that he referenced, you know, I work with people and, you know, these people are fighting for our country and this kind of stuff. But I think it's funny that he goes, well, I talked, you know, he talked to the people he works with. He talks right. to, you know, this guy, and he talks to his neighbors. I would like to know what neighbors he talked to.
Right.
But also, it also is very interesting that he said, I thought civil unions would be enough. It's a right. weird statement to say.
Right.
Like, I thought for you people that would be good. You could visit people in the hospital. We kind of semi-count right. you. That's cool. You know, even, like, to me saying that is like, whoa, that's it's weird. But it's nice that he, you know, says that that's what he used to think, and now he changed his mind. And
I refer to the case of it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. So I believe that civil unions would have been fine. But you apparently want things that everybody else can have as well. I can respect that. It took me time. If I'm going to be president, there's some things I think I would have figured out in my head. I wouldn't be wishy-washy about. That's what I would think. I would think I would be ready with how I feel about gay marriage. A yes or a no, and I can explain my position why.
Yeah, but I think he was that way. And now he's saying, okay, I was set on this position, and I think it's admirable for somebody to be able to change his mind, you know. And
it doesn't sound like he was ever set.
It shows growth. Well, he said, I thought civil unions were enough,
right.
but now I'm looking around and going, well, why would it be enough when everybody else has this other right? And in terms of traditions and religion on, you know, he mentioned that based on marriage and how people are, you know, really feel strongly because of traditions and religion. I want to say this quote from Rush Limbaugh. We've arrived at a point where the president of the United States is going to lead a war on traditional marriage. Rush Limbaugh said it on his show on Wednesday. And this is a little comment that's going around on Facebook. Rush Limbaugh's first, second, third, and fourth wives could not be reached for comment.
The sanctity of marriage.
Exactly. Like, how dare you talk about the traditions and the religion of marriage when you got married and divorced fourth time?
Right.
Four times.
Three times, right.
Oh, is he still married to the fourth one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a chance.
I'm looking at his face. Yowza. Ooh. He's so lucky he's not gay.
Well, I'm looking at Fox News' website.
Only a woman could be that forgiving.
Fox News' website says, Obama flip-flops. He declares war on marriage. First a war on Christmas, now a war on marriage. I mean, why don't you just write, holy shit, he did it.
Yeah, war on marriage? What is wrong with you?
He's starting a war on marriage. Well, that's all I need to know. Sarah Tolomash writes, Obama should have said he endorses faggot marriage if he wants to appease both sides. Then everybody's happy.
We still get to call them faggots? All right, then.
Ted Nugent, he's no Obama fan. He was on a interview and a CBS interview, and the CBS news just shows he just goes on this rant about what a good person he is out of nowhere. He explains how he's the nicest guy in town. If you find a nicer guy than him, he'll suck your dick.
That's wow,
how,
really?
That's how rock stars gamble. Okay, if the Jets lose, I suck your dick. They're extreme.
I offer you this. Have you done a lot of interviews?
Decent number.
Call me when you sit down across from someone who has more families with dying little boys and girls who get a call to take them on their last fishing trip in life. Call me when you meet someone who does that more than I do. Because that's really moderate. In fact, you know what that is? That's extreme. I'm an extremely loving, passionate man, and people who investigate me honestly, without the baggage of political correctness, ascertain the conclusion that I'm a damn nice guy, and if you can find a screening process more powerful than that, I'll how's that sound?
We have no idea where that unexpected outburst came from. The second part of it directed to a female CBS News producer who was off camera. But Nugent did just have one of his Midwest Rock and Roll Express tour dates canceled by the U.S. Army, a group he considers the core of his support.
These military guys are my blood brothers.
So then when they say you can't play for them.
So then when I hear that political correctness has somehow metastasized into the decision makers of the military, I was really let down that political correctness has any role at all in the military.
What's next?
I'm a perfect human being. I stumble perfectly. But I also aspire to and accomplish a perfect standing up, dusting off in that arena, and continue on. At the end of every day and at the end of my life, I will be in the asset column. I will better mankind. I will better the environment. I will better America. I'm dedicated to it. I can't be stopped.
Poor guy. He needs a band again.
Well, here's the funniest thing. When you yell at someone how you're the nicest fucking guy in the fucking world, right, and if you don't believe me, just suck my fucking dick.
No, he'll suck your dick. He'll suck your dick.
Well, I apologize. Why would somebody who's the nicest person in the world
demand
it? Yeah, sure. But he's the nicest goddamn fucking guy in the world. I don't think you can argue that when your speech is so eloquent.
He's like, I will happily suck your dick.
Happily.
I'll
put a smile on my face.
Start looking. I go on fishing trips with people. You'll never find someone nicer than that.
Dying children, Keith, not just people.
Do you guys remember I played Stranglehold?
If I had boobs, I would let them suck at them, no matter how old they were.
Mother's Day is coming up, and I want to talk about Sherry's Berries. Berries, BERRIES.com. Berries start at $19.99. They deliver these strawberries dipped in chocolate, nuts, caramel, and everything right to your mom's house, right wherever you want to go.
Well, we had them delivered to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yum. I had 3 strawberries last night. I was full.
We ate all of ours. Over 40% savings with the code KATG. They're so good. You can double the berries you get for $10 more. Visit berries.com, BERRIES.com. Click on the microphone in the top right corner, type in KATG, berries.com. Click on the microphone, type in KATG. The offer expires tonight at midnight. So get your order in. I am very excited to introduce to you a special guest here on Keith and the Girl. I'm talking about Charlie Todd, the genius behind Improv Everywhere. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Good to be here.
We talked to Charlie before, of course. If you remember, show 1166. You go to keithandthegirl.com, you click on guests, you can find all the guests we have, and you'll see the show Charlie was on. It was called 1166, America, Fuck Yeah.
You should be very proud, Charlie.
Hey, you know, I'm all for that.
I'm telling you, if you don't know what I'm talking about, and I don't know how, because if you ask me, I don't know if Charlie Todd invented the flash mob, but without question, I will say that he made it cool. He made it popular. I will say that Charlie Todd is the reason you see flash mobs used in TV shows and commercials. It's why you wouldn't know what they were talking about. And you can have like a a 10-second commercial and you're like, ah, that's a flash mob. I heard of these. Charlie is the reason.
Yeah, he's the reason why we have extra police everywhere every once right. in a while. Just watching people do weird shit and going, no, that's okay. They're just doing weird shit. I have it down.
If good. You're wondering, why does a dog have to sniff my book bag just so I get on the subway? Charlie has jokes to tell.
I've probably created some policies over the years at various institutions and... Well, corporations.
Well, this is good timing because Chemda finished a flash mob that she did in the style that Charlie does. And now we have a video that people can see. And I feel like, sitting here, I'm in one of Charlie's videos because I feel like I'm looking at twins right now. I'm looking at two of the same people, right?
Chemda, yeah. you're and Charlie, sure.
We're pretty identical, yeah.
Let me tell you how not identical we are. We did do the first Keith and the Girl flash mob ever. It was on April 15th of this year. And so cool that people do come and get together and are excited to do silly things because we're so bombarded by our work and by our nonsense and the usual stuff that we do, like brunch or go to a movie. And I feel like this is an activity. And it's exciting. I'm so nervous to create this. And I'm glad Charlie's here because I could tell him that any amount of money that he made was highly earned. Any amount of time that he put into it was genius because I really took the time to put this together. I really did. For those of you who were there, I promise that I walked the path with timing. I timed out the lights, you know, because...
Right. Run, do the, act like a fool up to this block. Then when right. you get on this corner, do this jackassy thing.
Yeah, it was a very timed out event. And I walked with Lauren. We wrote things down. We took consideration about when the light changes, when it doesn't change, and, you know, how long it takes and how many people you're going to run into. And to be honest... We came up with 45 minutes to 50 minutes. Now, when we got back the audio, it was about 35 minutes. And even listening to it, the audio that people are going to listen to right. and do the thing, I was like, oh, this sounds like it's taking so long. And, you know, okay. And I actually...
What do you mean? I'm sorry. It took you 45 minutes. The audio was 35 minutes?
Yeah, it took me 45 minutes. But, you know, and then I put together the...
People would listen to an MP3.
Yes. But I put together the script right. and then gave it to Lucas. Lucas put the, and I told him like about this much between this, but he also guessed as well using Google Maps. And I mean, all this stuff was looked up and still it ended up being 35 minutes, but I didn't say anything because it still sounded like a long time. And I even cut two more minutes because I was like, I don't think it takes that long to go to Second Avenue, even though it did. I had it written down.
Right.
Turns out during our flash mob, I made everyone hit pause.
like, you just started yelling at everyone, wait, there's been a change, press
yes,
pause.
Yes.
I heard that this flash mob ended up being a workout. And while you're supposed to skip down a block, people are doing some kind of triple time skip.
Right.
Yes, because at some point they realize my next step was, and you should reach Third Avenue in just a couple moments, and they were on Second. For those who don't know, who don't live in Manhattan, yes, it's just a block, but it's
a big block.
It's a size of four blocks in Manhattan.
And it's an avenue.
Yeah, it's an avenue. So it really threw me off. So I did. I had them press pause, and everyone was so good about it. They were actually relieved. And we ended up, it was a nice walk for 1.5 blocks that actually did take about, you know, 5 to 10 minutes.
Right.
Then when we restarted, you know, now this isn't going to be in the...
The video.
In the video that everyone's going to see, because we cut it down. You're not right. watching a 45-minute video. You're watching a 5-minute video. So, but I every moment that this happened, I thought of Charlie Todd and what a genius he is.
Right.
I thought of just all the work that gets put into it. And you are work. I worked with about 70 people.
Right.
You work with thousands.
Yeah, the big MP3 experiment we did, which I think you attended, right? The one last
yes,
summer?
Yeah.
So that one had 3,500 people. At that point, it's sort of hard to count. We had some aerial photographs and, you know, did our best to number people from, you know, an aerial photograph, but it's tough. But yeah, I mean, it is, working with crowds is really challenging. And especially if you're designing something specific like that, where you have time intervals and, you know, I'll go and walk it and I'll do it with a group of 10 people or something, but you just never know how long it's going to take. Thousands of people, you know. I mean, you can experience it just in Manhattan.
Do you say, like, walk towards 4th Avenue, and when it's Tuesday, we're going to make a left?
Yeah. Then on Wednesday, we'll...
Right.
I mean, I try to I try to avoid walking from point A to point B. I try to just have it be more we're in this general area and we don't have to get anywhere.
But it's such a cool thing to suddenly see a mob of people either dressed the same or holding the same thing. It's so cool to walk down. Even as a person who's not involved, I'm like, yay, a flash mob is going on and I'm part of watching it. I could be one of those people who they catch going, what's happening?
I mean, just in terms of walking, like if you're walking by yourself in the city, you go a certain pace. If you're someone else, you know, if there's two of you, you might slow down a little bit if that person's slower than you, or you might be able to keep the pace. As soon as it's three people, forget it. You're going slow. I hate walking. Like if I'm with a group of four, I'll just find the person who's the fastest walker and I'll just take off with them and screw the other people. We'll see them when we get to the restaurant or whatever.
I think some people don't like walking with me because I will turn around to somebody and go, why are you walking behind me? I don't understand.
Right.
And I feel bad, but yeah, my pacing, my timing, and in New York also, you have all these other people coming your way. So you can't always walk next to each other. You can't always walk in a group. You do sometimes end up with your group of four people walking as if you're the Beatles album cover.
Right.
You know?
You have to.
I mean, you know.
I had an idea for a flash mob. I thought it would be easier. Okay, we'll mail you this MP3.
Uh-huh.
And you hear it in your house. And we all do the same thing in our house. And then you don't have to worry. Did somebody get to where they were supposed to be on time? Kind of had a different idea. Do you have trouble?
That just sounds like an aerobics workout.
Right. Well, nobody seemed on board for my idea. So we have this footage and we give it to somebody to edit.
Right.
And we say, all right, look at the work Charlie does. You know, who's kidding who? This is what we're going for.
Right.
So we get back something totally different. It's like, I know what you said. But this is what I came up with as an artist. It's like, well, this has nothing to do with, and Kenda saw this video and she goes, you know what? I quit. Now she was dead serious, but I don't know what she's quitting from. Life, she's talking.
Quitting
she's talking about going to an island. She's so fed up from all the hard work she's doing, right? And it's like, nobody's listening to me. What's the point?
For the record, and this person who edited is listening, I don't want him to seem like, you know, this one video just threw me into a river or something. I have been dealing with a lot lately, and I think I understand why people have nervous breakdowns. That's all. I've just... It's coming to a head where I don't know what to do anymore because it's not just this video. It's a lot of things that I didn't do
what you wanted to at all. But I would argue that, and it's like I'm not reading this, am I? You would argue that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, sometimes I've been very lucky to have really good editors that I've worked with over the years. And
have you ever wasted your time? Like the footage didn't come out, or you're like, I put all that together. I mean, your videos, you have people on the roofs, like you said, taking aerial shots, and that. I mean,
There, a lot of planning goes into, you know, both creating the experience for the participants and the experience for the people who are not the participants that will be surprised by it. But you know, you also have to plan quite a bit for the video, because I know, you know, the event that I did last summer, 3,500 people participated. That's a lot. Probably another few thousand were in the area and witnessed it. Maybe even only a few hundred witnessed it. But I know that beyond that potentially millions of people are going to see it online.
Right.
So, you know, I have to kind of keep all three of those audiences in mind.
Does anybody ever say to you, I didn't charge my camcorder? Like, I do a stand-up show once a year. I do it once a year, one time, and that's the point. What is Keith going to say when this is the only time he's saying it in front of people?
Right.
And not in front of friends, not in front of family, in front of nobody, in front of stuffed animals when I'm at home.
Right.
You know, I know what I'm going to say mostly. So I'm saying it for the first time. And then I'd finish one year and they go, ooh, so we recorded the sound from the board, but there's a buzz the whole time. I'm like, well, why wouldn't you tell me? I thought it would be best just to keep you going.
Yeah.
Or now I just found out this last one I did, they didn't do an HD. They put letterbox on. And it's like, what is going on? What? So I don't know. Is it ruined? Did you ever do some big thing? And it's like, you got the footage in the Best Buy, right? When they were calling the cops. I didn't think that'd be important, Charlie.
Yeah, you know, I've I've had problems over the years, and more so when I was starting out. And also, you know, I started out in 2001, and this is mini DV cameras. I mean, the technology has gotten so much better over the last 11 years since I've been doing this. And it's always been volunteer, too. I mean, I'm just asking upon friends and members of the group to come out and film it. We've gotten more professional now. And now, generally, I'm also able to pay people a fee who are filming stuff for me because the videos make a little bit of money on YouTube, and I'm able to kind of budget that out. I've got a great crew now, but yeah, back in the old days, it was just, you know, I didn't have a camera. I needed somebody with a camera. Oh, you know, my friend Carl's brother has a camera. He'll come film it, you know, and there have been times where somebody left the lens cap on, literally, you know, we did a thing in Abercrombie and Fitch. This is years ago. So the Abercrombie and Fitch on Fifth Avenue, there's a shirtless male model that stands out front, right? He's like their brand ambassador. Their brand is very much about the shirtless male.
And men like this? I see some of these ads in magazines. I'm like, who is this for? I'm a man, I think.
And I think that Abercrombie is geared towards straight men too. I mean, I don't think gay guys really wear Abercrombie, from what I can tell. But so I think it's like a straight male, like kind of like college frat boy type brand. But if you go in that store, every product has like an image of a shirtless man on it. They have a 6 foot tall shirtless male statue downstairs.
Oh, you know what it is? If you don't look like this, maybe buy a shirt. That's the only thing I could come up with.
So I came up with this idea of sort of pranking them by bringing about 100 guys into the store, and then at the exact predetermined moment, they took their shirts off and then sort of hid their shirts in their back pocket or somewhere. It looked like they didn't have a shirt at all.
Right.
So we basically confronted them with like, okay, you have a shirtless male model in front of your store. You have this three-story mural with shirtless men working on boats. Like the whole store is based on that. Well, let's bring that to life for you.
And these probably aren't Abercrombie looking guys.
It was a range. So there were a few guys. I mean, I just sent it out to my mailing list. Right. Whoever showed up, I didn't care what body type they were. Yes, there were some fat guys. There were some guys with six packs. I mean, it was sort of, you know, and the majority were just sort of like regular, more, you know, average-looking dudes.
And two people got jobs.
Yeah. Well, so they kicked us out, you know, and they had a meltdown about it. It was similar in structure to the Best Buy prank I did where I had people wear blue polo shirts and khaki pants and go into a Best Buy.
Except the guys that you had come in with blue shirts were more helpful.
Yes.
Than the actual Best Buy workers.
That was probably true. So the managers, and they did not find it funny. I mean, that's not a store or a brand that can laugh at itself, I don't think. I think they take themselves very seriously.
I like the serious looks, which is obviously what you're going for. Where they really are on their walkie-talkies like, we have a problem. Like, and they don't know what to do. And good on you that they need a couple back and forths on their walkie-talkie before they figure out how to go, can you leave?
Yeah. I try to create things that are like, well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe they have a no shirt, no shoes, no service policy. Right. That's pretty standard. But I've created the situation that they had not anticipated before, so they don't immediately know how to deal with it. And there was one guy who actually, he went and got a shirt, and it was like an Abercrombie shirt, so it was like $60 shirt or something. And he's waiting in line to buy it. He's got his credit card out. He's one away from the register, and the manager came up and said, you can't buy that shirt. The guy's like, what do you mean? Clearly I need a shirt.
If anybody needs one.
And the manager says, if you put on a shirt, you can buy a shirt. But unless you put on a shirt, you can't buy a shirt. And I love that they like turned away a sale because they were so mad. But then the really funny thing is that all of a sudden we have to leave the store because we're being told to leave. And we're walking out past their shirtless male model who's being paid to do exactly what we're being kicked out for doing.
Right. So was there hassle about that video?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So the reason I started talking about this is, you know, I probably had four cameramen in there. One guy had his camera and like it was in a shopping bag, like a kind of a small bag. He was holding it like this and the lens was pointing out and he had this whole thing all figured out and it looked great. And then after the prank, he came up to me and said, yeah, I had the lens cap on the entire time. Mm-hmm. So I got nothing. But that's always been my strategy is you just can't rely on any one person.
Right.
And if you I always try to have, you know, when I'm forming my staff, I want to have one more person than I think I need because somebody in the last minute might flake and might not even show up. And then even then, after the one person that flakes, I want to have one more person than I really need because somebody might have some kind of technical issue.
And to be honest, I learned this thing. We had three cameras and we were running. I mean, if the flash mobbers thought they had a workout, I had a serious just trying to get in front of the flash mob. I think next time a camera person on every block. So as the thing is coming, but I thought that was happening. And I have advice for those who are going to try to do their flash mob on their own. Don't. It is fun. And I will be doing it again in whatever way, maybe not this particular way or another way. I think one of the issues is actually getting a mob together. I mean, especially in New York, there's so much going on. I thought, you know, this could be cool because especially during this this week, we have a lot of people coming in from out of town. It's already an event, so I know people will come out. But if we were to try to do this without an audience already, a built-in situation already, I can't even imagine starting with how do we get the mob? Then how do we record it? How do we put this together? I mean, it is a big deal. But the video is awesome. The video is very giggle-worthy.
Good.
Keith and the girl, it came out really well. I'm really excited to put it out. And I have to say that people should also get on your list, Charlie, because every time yours come out, like I might be having a bad day. Swear to God, I put on your video and I feel a little better.
Kinda didn't have to leave for an island today.
I feel a little better because although, yes, you're bothering the Abercrombie and Fitch people, it's usually in such a sweet, like there's, I like the one that you did where you just put a megaphone. I think it was in Union Square Park.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It was just a megaphone and people just kind of came up to it and realized it was on and did whatever. And
there were instructions on, there's a megaphone attached to a podium with instructions, a little placard that said, say something nice. So the project was just for people to say, they had a chance to amplify their voice in Manhattan and say something nice in front of random strangers.
It ended up being so sweet. I watched that video. It's one of my favorites because it really did just put a smile on my face. Like, oh, people are nice. That's so sweet. But aren't you scared to do things like that where you can't have amplification in Manhattan everywhere? You do have to have permits for things like even just to leave something on the street. Do you ever get caught by the police or shut down?
Yeah, I mean, we've had trouble over the years occasionally. I mean, for that one, we didn't have any trouble. You know what? That's not entirely true. We did a couple of times had like a park ranger or parks department person come up to us and say, you know, you can't have this here. So we would just be like, okay. And we went from Union Square Park to Madison Square Park. And then we did it there for a while. And then, you know, if somebody had a problem there, we'd go somewhere else.
If I put my feet on a subway seat.
Yep.
I get a fine.
You can get a ticket, yeah.
I look at one of Charlie's videos. He's putting literal beds out. People are taking naps.
Now, yeah, you had a sleeper car episode.
That was right in this neighborhood, too. We did that in Astoria on the N-Train.
Do you get permits for that, or you just take a risk?
No. I almost always, I don't have permission for what I'm doing. So, you know, I think that the sleeper car project, so the premise is, you know, we did late at night, Sunday night, it was here in Queens on the above ground N train, so you could see it was nighttime outside.
Right.
And, you know, the premise is maybe people who are working late, coming home from work, wouldn't it be nice to be able to get some rest on the train? Like, you know, a long haul Amtrak train might have a sleeper car. And I played a conductor. I was dressed up like a conductor. And I was telling, you know, I was asking people what their stop was. And I'd wake them up before their stop. You know, but it was, you know, we didn't even know that anyone would actually get in the beds. We had a couple of ringers who were going to be wearing pajamas and sleeping.
Oh,
and then,
funny.
As it turned out, we had lots of people who said yes to it. But I don't think it's technically against the rules. It is against the rules to put your feet up on the car or to lay down on the seats. But I don't. I mean, you're allowed to like transfer furniture, right? I mean, if you guys needed to get a table from one apartment to the other, you can bring your table on the subway.
I'm sure that when the police officer is like, "Listen, you can't do this," you're like, "Listen, I just bought a bed.
Yeah.
I'm just testing it out. This is totally normal." Yeah. I'm sure he's like, "Oh, okay, my bad.
I didn't know you'd reason with me."
I think we're lucky that no one from the MTA saw it when it happened.
Right.
Because I think they, even if they couldn't figure out exactly what was against the rules about it, they would have said, "You can't do this."
You don't get permission for the 3,500 people that come into the park. It is a mob, and you're not allowed to have mob-type situations.
Right. No, for the MP3 experiment project, which we do every year, for the first 4 years we did it, we did not have permission. And then once it sort of grew to be bigger than 1,000 people, I started thinking that it was the responsible thing to do to tell people we were coming. The spirit of improv everywhere is don't ask for permission to express yourself creatively in public places. You should be able to do what you want to do as long as it's harmless and it's fun, and you shouldn't have to go through all this red tape and get it approved by some committee. And I feel that way about the majority of our projects, but I do think at a certain point when you're going to show up to someone else's park and bring 4,000 people, you should let them know. So for that particular project, for the last several years, we do get permission.
Of course, I would find it really interesting if you didn't get the permission, 4,000 people showed up in the park. That would be a good video too.
Yeah.
Like the sirens and everything.
The very same park that we did it this summer, Rockefeller Park down in Lower Manhattan, we did do it in 2007 with about 800 people, and we had no permission for that. So this year, we worked with River to River Festival, and it was permitted, and the park had agreed to it. But the individual security guards maybe didn't know that. So I got there early and I saw I guess they're cops. So they're like park police or something. And I went up to one of them and I was like,
I guess they're cops.
I was like, hey, just so you know, I'm doing something with River to River Festival. We're called Improv Everywhere. We have this big project that's going to be happening. There's going to be several thousand people showing up here in about an hour. And he was like, what? And then I explained to him, well, we put this MP3 on our website and people download it and they all show up and they're following instructions. And he was like, you were the guy that was here 4 years ago. And I was like, yeah, sorry about that. I didn't have permission then. Sorry if that freaked you guys out. I do have it today, though, so
right.
Thanks.
What do you think about this idea? We rent you out, right? You send out your mailing list to your millions. Uh-huh. And what I would like everybody to do is go into a guitar center, right?
Yep.
And they say, I want to buy a mixer. They grab something expensive. And uh-huh. they say, do you have a warranty on this? If anything breaks, I can return it, no hassle. And they uh-huh. go, yes, it's a 3-year warranty for only $60, and that you can bring it back anytime you want. And then they go at the same time, liar, and they break everything in the store. This just came to me. I just improv that.
I like it. Sounds good.
Would you be, do you have to catch yourself or will you never ever be political? Did you think for a second, let me tell everybody to put a Coney poster up at midnight if that's their thing.
Right. I've always avoided politics with Improv Everywhere. And, I'm very political. I watch MSNBC way too much and follow the horse race of the campaign and volunteered for the Obama campaign in 2008. But I don't like to mix
right.
what we do. And part of it is, too, I think it takes away some of the fun. So if you have 200 people frozen in place in the Grand Central Terminal, that makes it look like time stopped, right? There's something magical about that. You're walking right. through and this guy's frozen and, whoa, I'm the only one not frozen. It seems like time has stopped. This is like from a superhero movie. But I think if you look around and everybody's frozen and they're wearing t-shirts that say Kony 2012 right. or U.S. out of Afghanistan, then there's nothing magical about it. It's like, oh, I'm a part of a political protest or I've encountered a PR stunt or something like that.
Yeah, I didn't feel better watching the Kony video like I do watching your videos.
Yeah.
Now, how you I saw the Kickstarter that you have. You raised over $25,000 for a movie coming up. And I read all the stuff, but I'm not sure. Are you putting all your are we calling them flash mobs?
I actually don't use that term because another guy, Bill Wasik, created a project called the Mob Project a few years after Improv Everywhere got started. I don't think he really knew about me. And that was where the term flash mob came. Somebody described his thing. So, Improv Everywhere, and we'll such the video that just came out is a good example of one that's not a flash mob at all. We just had maybe 7 actors. So for me, I sort of became someone who did things similar to flash mobs just because of my popularity. I did things for years with my, the first couple years in New York, it was like, oh, I know 5 people in New York who I can talk into doing something weird with me in public. And then it became, I know 50 people in New York. And then all of a sudden, their friends, and it just kind of got to be big. But I'll often, and I think flash mob is kind of a bad term for the MP3 experiment too, because, even the one you did, like it lasts 45 minutes, right? It's not really a flash,
Right.
And, and we do things that are sometimes, just a handful of people, so they're not really mobs either. But for better or worse, I think I'm stuck with that term forever being associated with what I do, which is fine. I've gotten over it.
Yeah. It's like Improv Everywhere. None of this is improv. This takes a lot of work.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's the other thing I'm stuck with is the horrible name of my group.
That up, Keith.
I take a lot of fucking time everywhere.
Yeah, no, I mean, there'll be people on YouTube who will comment like, they should call this highly planned activities that mostly take place in New York.
Everywhere.
Yeah. But, the the genesis of the name basically is I had done a lot of improv comedy in college. I moved to New York. I knew I was going to start taking classes at Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. I was really into improv. And the first couple of pranks I did were very spontaneous, where I was just out going to a bar with a friend and, you know, we thought of something weird we could do and we went and did it. So it was more improvised. And as things have gotten bigger and more involved and more people, I spend weeks planning things.
But you don't... And I think this is a compliment. You don't seem like a let's just fuck with people. Let's just, you know, boogity boogity. You know, you don't.
Right. And that's partly just my personality. And it's partly just I started taking classes at UCB and learning about how, you know, in improv scenes, the easy way out is just to fight with each other or to, you know, I mean, good improv comes from agreement. And it comes from being positive and saying yes to things. So that's. There are some things that I learned in improv that have kind of guided improv everywhere.
We're saying for being a comedian of sorts, you're oddly normal.
Well, that's true for the most part, yeah.
You're married, right?
Yeah, I got married in October.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Is she get into this stuff too?
We did a prank at her wedding.
Was she in on it?
Yes. Oh, okay. Oh, I would have never done it without her.
Married my twin.
No, she's been a big part of improv everywhere, and we've been together for 6 years. So okay. She was Princess Leia in our Star Wars subway car prank,
okay, where
we reenacted a scene from Star Wars on the subway.
Like Darth Vader was trying to get Princess Leia, right?
Yeah,
but you're exactly. On the F train.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And we used sort of the, you know, the doors of the subway opening kind of looked like the rebel ship and okay. The opening of A New Hope. But so we decided that we had to do something at our wedding. I mean, every friend and family member who was attending had expectations that something would happen, which was, you know, we felt a lot of pressure. It was like, oh, we know something's going to happen at your wedding, you know.
Wow, right. Not only do you have to plan a wedding, you have to plan an improv scene.
And I told everybody, like, no, I'm not doing anything. It's my job. I don't want to work my wedding. Right. I don't want to be stressed about camera angles at my wedding, you know. But we ended up, and it was actually her idea, we ended up finding something funny to do. So I run a wrestling league at Upright Citizens Brigade. It's called the UCBW, and it's a comedy wrestling league. It's kind of a parody of the WWE,
okay,
which is tough to parody because it's pretty right. absurd as it is.
You didn't make them look silly, did you?
Yeah. But I was, you know, I was a wrestling fan in college. So, you know, anyway, right. So a friend of mine plays his character from that league. So he dressed as his wrestling character and sat in the back row dressed normally, and then sort of right before the end of the ceremony, he went behind a tree. He was outside and got dressed in this costume. And then our officiant asked if anyone had any objections, which you see in TV and movies a lot, but real weddings rarely include that right. anymore.
Oh, they don't even ask that anymore?
I did go to one last year where they did, but I feel like it's the norm. Like, that's such a ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Well, who is going to have something to say? And if so, why are you waiting until this moment in the middle of the wedding?
Like, well, I imagine, you know, the officiant is like, okay, if you have anything to say, you can say it now. Don't worry. We'll still cut the cake. Everybody will still be able to have a nice time. So go ahead.
Yeah, I officiated this dog wedding. A person...
Don't ask. It was improv. Right.
A guy married another guy. One of these guys honestly believes he's a dog. So anyway, you know how it goes.
Sure, here. Yeah, that happens all the time.
So, but then, you know, it would come to the part where you think I would say, if anybody has any reason, I think everybody has a reason, you know? That, right. That's not the time.
The reason is 50% of marriages end in divorce. Like, I could just come out with, you know, right. statistics.
I don't know these guys, but I have some facts. So they say, if anybody has something to say.
So the officiant says that, and then this wrestler, and his character name is Pukang Kang.
Right.
The Polynesian powerhouse. My friend Eugene Cordero. So he stands up in the back and says, I've got a problem with it. And then we had, I think it was Stone Cold Steve Austin's theme music started playing over the PA system. And he marches down, punches me in the face, takes out all four of the groomsmen, and then gets me in a chokehold. Eventually, the groomsmen kind of regain their composure and gang up on him, get him off of me. Somebody throws me a steel chair. I hit him in the face with a steel chair, and he runs away. We start, and then we said, you know, our final vows or whatever, and got married.
Oh my God, you were out of breath when you said I do.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, you know, it was really fun. And the way... The bride, no one knew about it besides my wife, Cody, and myself and the groomsmen and the officiant. But so her bridesmaids didn't know, and no one in the audience knew. So
is anybody crying?
My niece, who was about 2 years old, she was crying.
She goes up and kicks everybody in the balls.
Yeah.
But didn't he marry the most perfect person for him? Because another one, this is my day.
Yeah. No, and it was her idea. She said, what if we did a wrestling thing? So, but if you watch the video, she acts like she's not in on it during the, you know, to make it seem real and convincing. And all the comments are like, I can't believe you did this to your wife. It's like, I don't know. It says in the description, she's in on it. Read the description. Right.
And then showed it, and she never had a problem with it going viral. And,
you know, I actually wasn't going to put it online. I was like, you know what? We filmed it just because we filmed our ceremony.
Right.
I was like, this will just be a thing. Like,
let something be for us.
I don't need to put my wedding on YouTube. And then I saw the footage. I was like, this is pretty funny. Like, why not? You know, we'll make a little bit of money on the ads on YouTube, you know, help pay for this expensive wedding. Why not?
And Charlie said to his wife, you know what? I saw the footage after all. And she goes, I know. Yes, you can put it up. I know. I knew the whole time. Who's kidding? No. Do you do little pranks at home? Like, she goes to pour milk in her cereal and it's orange juice?
No, not too much.
Is April 1st like the greatest day? Is that your thing? Do you get into Lying Day?
Lying Day. I know. I mean, that is sort of what it's become, right? It's just like, you know, like, oh, I'm pregnant. No, I'm not. April 1st, you know, April Fools.
Yeah, don't let him act all innocent. I've gotten his April 1st jokes and I fell for it.
Did you fall for the one this year?
No, I know better now. Okay. But I fell for the one where people are naked on the train, like bottomless.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to kill you.
What do you mean you fell for it?
So I do a fake video every April 1st. So, you know, Improv Everywhere puts out prank videos throughout the year. So it's like, well, why are we going to put one out on April Fool's Day? It's just, it's a normal day. Business as usual for us. So what I instead do is every April Fool's Day, I put out a video that is actually a prank on the viewer rather than a prank on whoever randomly saw us in public.
Okay.
So I'll stage it. In past years, this year I did something a little differently. In past years, I've made it seem like I lost my mind and did something with really poor judgment. So the one you're referring to is we do our no pants subway ride every January. So I made it seem
that one's logical,
and that's a real that's the normal one. But I made it seem like we did a no underwear subway ride where
you're really naked,
completely naked.
No, just bottom naked.
Well,
and
your dick and pussy is out.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So instead of just taking your pants off, you took your pants and your underwear off. And what I did is I had about 12 friends of mine, guys and girls, wear skin colored underwear, and we did. They took their pants off, but just like the no pants subway ride, they're walking around with their underwear. And then we blurred the skin-colored underwear. And
he's still getting the responses. Like, people are like, what the fuck are you doing?
So I also had some other friends come and give those responses too, right? So,
you fuck! Yeah.
So, you know, it's the whole thing staged. I mean, it was just, the whole thing was just like a short film. Shoot, you know, unlike, you know, we took over a car and, you know.
I was so disgusted.
People were outraged.
Right?
Oh, the outrage.
I was more upset that somebody put their bare ass on a train seat. Yeah. I was like, you don't do that. Somebody peed on there for sure. Stop it.
Now, is it worth it? Do people stop following you? They go, take me off your mailing list?
It is sort of a risk. I mean, I've done some pretty offensive things. A few years ago, I made it look like we played a prank on someone's funeral. On April Fool's Day. It was called Best Funeral Ever. And it was like, we found a guy who was, he died. We saw the obituary and didn't have that many friends or family. So we're going to pack his funeral and make it really awesome. So we went into Greenwood Cemetery in Brooklyn. And the part that actually was a prank, like, we had to sneak a coffin into Greenwood Cemetery. And we actually staged a funeral in Greenwood Cemetery without permission. And, you know, there's like, patrols, you know, riding by or whatever, is like, oh man, we're gonna get in trouble. You can't stage a fake funeral in a cemetery without letting them know. But no one said anything. And I think if anybody saw us, it's like, even if they were like, I didn't think there was a funeral scheduled today, or this seems wrong, you wouldn't risk it to try to go up and like stop a funeral.
Yeah. I don't like the way you're grieving.
Yeah.
Right, so, like, you wouldn't think, no, they weren't scheduled. They must have brought in.
Yeah, yeah. They brought their own coffin in. So we staged it, and I had, you know, we set up a bunch of chairs, and I had like 8 people play the family, but those were all actors.
Right.
And it, you know, and the premise was, oh, there were only 8 people grieving this guy, and then we brought 30 more to make it awesome. And then you can tell in the video that the family is like, doesn't like it.
Right.
They sort of like put their hand over the camera and all that. And, but at the end of the video, I come back on like, well, some people didn't like it as much as we thought, but it was still a great project. You know, here it is.
I call it a success. When you're walking with one of your friends on the street, Like, do people have trouble trusting you, period? If you're walking with one of your friends and then a woman is yelling at a guy, get the fuck away from me, and slaps him, do they look at you and go, is this you?
I don't get that when I'm with people, but I do. Like, this morning I got a text from an acquaintance of mine, and she was like, I was in Central Park and this guy was acting really weird. Are you doing something? And I wrote her back. I was like, nope, just a weirdo.
You live in New York.
Yeah. So I see that a lot. Like, I'll, you know, I have Twitter searches set up for, you know, the term improv everywhere. So I'll see people tweet, you know, oh, I'm on the F train and there's like 9 people wearing pink. I think improv everywhere is doing something here. It's like, no, sometimes there's just coincidences in the world. It's not always me.
I'm waiting for Charlie to call off his homeless goof. All right, everybody, inside.
There are no actual homeless people. They're all actors.
This guy's good. He had people living in the subway. I mean, this guy, they made documentaries.
But, you know, there is something cool about the fact that, you know, general, like, weirdness. If there's something weird in the air, right, I tend to sort of get blamed for it,
right,
which I don't mind. But I don't usually. Yeah, well, that's true. I don't usually prank friends, though. So, you know, that's one, like, Improv Everywhere is not, like, Punked, where Ashton is setting up his friends to be, you know, right, to be pranked. So
but
it's
Charlie,
more just random people.
Charlie can get out of trouble a lot. Like, I picture he's at his wedding, and if the minister really did say, if anybody has a reason they shouldn't get married, and a woman from his past really does say, yeah, I do, I'm pregnant with his baby, and Charlie goes, oh, that's a joke I set up, maybe it was bad timing, anyway, keep going. Not now, Charlie, all the time with you, I've learned my lesson. One of my favorite things is watching Charlie's videos, and you know, you see these people, like, they can't believe what they're looking at, you know, and then Charlie comes up to him, he's like, what's going on here?
Oh yeah.
And then they explain it to him, I've never seen such a thing, and they're too shocked to look at Charlie's face. He has this cat ate the canary face. It's like, yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of one of the tactics we use to get, right, like, verbal reactions, right, from people. So, you know, I'll wear a microphone and go, right, go chat with people.
What's going on here? Tell me more about it. It's like, well, can't you see? It's fucking crazy. Yeah, but tell me in words.
Say it out loud. Yeah, there's an art to getting that out of people, and I've gotten better at it over the years because, you know, initially you want to have a conversation, like you want to talk about how great it is too, and then, you know, but when we edit the video, nobody cares what the person who's in on it says.
Right.
So you sort of just have to ask an open-ended question and then just shut up and,
right,
and just hope that they'll, you know, keep talking.
There was a guy, his name is John Petrie, mm-hmm, and he stole things from me. He stole everything I owned. Okay, computer, TV, everything.
Okay.
I had him hold my stuff for a little bit. Seemed like a good guy that I worked with. Anyway, he stole this book that I was writing, scripts. That's the big thing. I don't know that I'll ever get this stuff back. Probably won't. Well, we figured this guy would be long gone by now. Turns out somebody works for Us Magazine, has access to finding people, finds this guy. This is years later. And this just happened, and found out he's in a jail in Baton Rouge. So we're calling this jail. Oh, yeah. We know where he is, when his court date is, everything like that. So we're trying to get we do the Keith and the Girl TV episodes. And we want to do one where I'm having a face-to-face with him, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's up for assault, robbery, all this. Now, of course, they won't let cameras in there. How, Charlie, do I get this guy on video? Do you recommend spy glasses? Because I really,
I mean,
can't get caught.
You're going into a jail?
I'm going into a jail.
Oh, boy.
And this we called these people. They seem a little slow. Like, if I get in trouble, just through paperwork, I'll be in jail for 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't want to have to get a hidden camera into a jail. I mean, yeah, you bake a cake with some spy glasses in the middle of it.
Mm.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's some pretty good technology. I mean, one, are you allowed to bring your phone in?
No.
I would doubt it.
Yeah.
No, I actually asked.
Because iPhones, you know, now have great HD cameras. You know, I mean, they make pretty good spy cameras these days that, you know, have the little pinhole in the middle.
Right.
I mean, the image quality isn't great, but it sounds like that's not what counts here. You just want to get it.
Yeah.
So you could try that, but I don't know.
Hmm.
I mean, they would let you bring glasses in to jail, I guess.
They would go through the metal detector.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I guess glasses, would glasses be...
I mean, they have, you know, computer chips in the frame, so I don't know.
The thing is it's not just him that's going to have to record. It's me, because in the video, we plan on me just chatting it up with this guy, and then it's like, let's bring him in, and then Keith comes in. So we both
have to
wear this.
You're doing like a Maury Povich talk show in this
We want to make it high quality.
Yeah, that's a challenge. And there's no other way. I mean, you're not going to be able to
I'm still
see this
trying
guy
to,
any other way.
Well, he's been like homeless and nowhere for a long time. It's very hard to trace because he doesn't usually put his name on anything because he's just a bum, really. He's like a, and like his family doesn't even want anything to do with him, you know.
Did he go crazy? Did he have a drug problem or something?
He ended up having a big cocaine problem that I didn't recognize. I just thought he had very sexy glassy eyes. I didn't know that was a sign. That was just a hip cat.
Well, I'm trying to get filming permission instead of talking to the jail because it seems like that's a better way to go.
You know, I just watched The Thin Blue Line, the Errol Morris documentary.
Right.
And, you know, he interviews many people who are in jail throughout that movie. It happens
all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saturday on MSNBC, it's Lock Up Raw for like 20 straight hours. So that's all takes place in prisons. So.
Yeah. There's a females in jail situation. Like there are a lot of, you know, I actually know someone, and she just emailed me yesterday. She's like, yeah, I'm going around to jails to, because she's a documentary maker for a couple big companies. And I'm like, whoa, how do I do this? So I'm going to be talking to her later.
You'd have to just not say, I hate this guy and want to get him to
right.
That's the thing. I'm afraid that they'll Google it. And I think one of our shows is named I Will Kill You, John Petrie. So I'm like, because my premise is we're reuniting these old roommates.
Use your middle name or something, maybe.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I wanted to see if he had a scoop.
Yeah.
But I asked, I started talking about this earlier on a different note, that you did raise money for your movie. I want to know what movie is happening out of this. Is it old footage and it includes behind the scene things?
Yeah. So I'm actually not making it and it wasn't my Kickstarter, but it was my friend who's making the movie. It was his Kickstarter. So, he's making a documentary about Improv Everywhere, and it's just sort of the behind the scenes and how it all came about. They're sort of putting it together now and figuring out exactly how he wants to tell the story. But, you know, we've been doing it for 11 years, so there's so much footage and there's so many things that have happened.
It's going to be so interesting. And for those who were in the flash mob and plan on being in another flash mob of Keith and the Girl, I promise I will watch this video before I try to put together another one. It really was fun, though, even though I was sweating bullets. But I think I sweat bullets through all the stuff that we put together because, like you said, you're worried about camera angles. Everyone's just worried about, am I blowing up the balloon right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that is sort of the reality is that when I'm doing this massively fun participatory thing, I'm probably having the least amount of fun because I'm worried about the security guards and everything that could go wrong. But, you know, I usually, my fun is when I watch the video and the footage later and, you know, get to just experience it knowing that it was already a success.
And actually, and afterwards, when everyone was, you kind of overhear and they're not saying it directly to you, that was fun. I'm like, whew.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, if everyone had fun, then I had fun.
Yeah.
I promise.
Right. Well, make sure you check out the site if you haven't, improveverywhere.com. And you'll see all these videos we're talking about. There's a new one up that's, just as good as everything else he has. And I bet you'll see some of these videos and go, I did see this. I didn't know this was him.
Right.
But you do fantastic work, Charlie. And it's very fun to see you again.
And you're based in New York, but you are doing touring. How does the touring work?
Yeah, I'm based here in New York, but college campuses very frequently, you know, the student activities board or whatever will bring me to do a project on their quad. I'll do the MP3 experiment project actually on the college campuses all the time. I also travel just to like weird art festivals or, you know, technology festivals or comedy festivals around the world.
How long does it take you to put together, especially, okay, you know the city, you've lived here. How long... Now you're at someone's campus. Do they send you the blueprints? Do you actually have to walk it?
Yeah, we've designed a version of the MP3 experiment that is designed to work on college campuses. So, you know, I just need them to give me the map of... I consult with the school where the best location would be to sort of plug this in.
Oh, so you're like, well, every campus has a cafeteria.
Yeah.
Everybody has a lawn where everybody plays Frisbee. That
exactly.
Kind of thing.
Every campus has this beautiful grassy quad with lots of foot traffic that's, you know, sort of perfect.
Okay. So it sounds like he knows what he's doing.
Right. Also to see our video, the one we were talking about the Keith and the Girl flash mob. And we have to call it that, Charlie, because we already did.
That's okay.
YouTube.com/Keith and the Girl. It will be up there for 1 week before it's in the VIP section. So go there now, check it out, send it to your friends, Facebook, and all that.
We'll talk to you tomorrow. KeithandTheGirl.com.